Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
2023 set the record for the most billion-dollar disasters in the United States in one calendar year. As the name suggests, a billion-dollar disaster is a weather or climate disaster event with losses exceeding $1 billion. From flooding to drought, winter storms to hurricanes, there were 28 of these events. Our next guest is the lead scientist for the National Centers for the Environmental Information's billion-dollar weather and climate disasters analysis. Welcome to the show, Adam Smith. Thank you for joining us on Weather Geeks.
Thank you, Dr. Shepard, for having me.
Well, it's a tradition on the podcast that I ask every guest how you became a weather geek.
Yes. So I grew up in the Hickory, North Carolina area. And I think with a lot of your prior guests, there were seminal moments in your childhood with extreme weather events. You actually experienced them firsthand. So on my short list would be Hurricane Hugo in 1989. A lot of damage, even well inland as it came through Charleston, Charlotte, Hickory. But then we can jump forward to 1993, Superstorm 1993. I was at a friend's house and we sledded for an entire week because I could not get home. We had a couple feet of snow, near hurricane force wind gusts. Also, in my undergraduate days at North Carolina State University, we had Hurricane Floyd come through. So I've always been fascinated with Earth, with how the different systems interact with society, with economics, with just our day-to-day life. And here I am today doing a job that I really love.
Well, we thank you for joining us. I think you're an inaugural guest on the Weather Geeks in terms of your appearances. So we always love to have new guests. We like our reoccurring guests as well. So as I mentioned, Alex is the lead scientist for the U.S. billion dollar. It actually is Adam Smith. Some of my notes say Alex Smith as well, but it is Adam Smith because I've known of Adam for some time. So you really are the lead scientist for the U.S. billion dollar weather and climate disasters analysis. So before we get into what that is, can you tell the listeners and viewers a little bit about what the National Centers for Environmental Information is and then what that program is about?
Yes, yeah, so NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information used to be called the National Centers for, or NCDC, which had a focus on weather and climate extremes, looking at different trends and anomalies, doing ingest, quality control, and developing products and services for a wide variety of decision makers and users. But then several years ago, we actually merged with the National Oceanic Data Center and Geophysical Data Center. So now we have oceans, geophysics, weather, and climate all together. And I think we're at something like 50 petabytes of data, and it's increasing exponentially. So we have hundreds and hundreds of different products and services across more than 500 different federal and academic and contract support personnel. And so it's a fascinating place to work, and it's always evolving. And it's headquartered in Asheville, North Carolina, where I am based.
And within that center, there are an array of things that go on. It's really one of the gems and jewels of our federal infrastructure for weather and climate and other types of data. So we thank you all and shout out to Deke Arndt, one of the colleagues that I know very well there. But in terms of this, let's get into this. So first of all, let me set the stage. I mean, we know that 2023 was the warmest year on record, and something that many people may not know, because I suspect they probably heard that bit of news. There were 28 weather climate disasters last year that total losses in excess of $1 billion. And in many cases, it's well beyond $1 billion. So tell us a little bit about this program and how you assess, arrive at those numbers.
Yes. So this program and analysis goes back to the year 1980. And the reason it starts in 1980 is because that's when the best public and private sector data is homogeneous over space and time. Looking at the 16 different asset classes that we capture across 12 different public and private sector partners for 7 different hazards. So the reason this is which is one product at NCEI is because it's important to understand how these different trends and extremes interface with our increasing exposure, our vulnerability, and of course, the influence of climate change on some of these extremes that lead to billion-dollar disasters. So we're bringing the best public and private sector data together to do a total direct loss analysis across 16 different asset classes, including damage to homes, businesses, government buildings like schools, all the contents of these structures, even time element losses like business interruption or loss of living quarters while your home is being repaired or rebuilt. But even public infrastructure, which sometimes the private sector doesn't focus on as much, we work with data from our public sector partners like FEMA, Small Business Administration, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, damage to roads, bridges, levee systems, electrical grids. But of course, even agriculture, our partner with USDA's data on crop insurance, that's valuable for the impact of heat, freeze events, cold events, winter storm events, and of course, drought. You mentioned the $28 billion disasters. In fact, the most costly of those 28 events last year was drought. It was a $14.5 billion event. And it had a strong heat component to it as well, which unfortunately killed several hundred people across many southwestern and southern states. So it's a very deep, rich, complex data set, and we're constantly adding more facets and information to it.
You know, we're talking with Adam Smith of NOAA. He's at the National Centers for Environmental Information. I wanted to kind of march through some of those events. You mentioned drought, and I think that's one that people may not really immediately think about because we often think of these sort of more telegenic episodic events like the hurricane or tornadic outbreak, if you will, but drought can be very costly. And reality is some of that economic loss from drought on those farms gets passed on to us when we're going to the grocery store because basic law of supply and demand says if you're reducing supply on a product, that's going to lead to price increases. And so it's just one of those ways I like to sort of connect the dots for people to their kitchen table issues in some of these events. So beyond drought, what else caught your attention this year?
Yeah, another interesting facet of 2023 was we had four separate billion-dollar flood events. So from the atmospheric rivers, you remember early in 2023 across much of California, to the Fort Lauderdale flooding in April, to the northeastern flooding in July, particularly in Vermont, but even New York and Pennsylvania and New Jersey had some flooding. And then we had an East Coast storm and flooding in late December. So those $4 billion flood events were actually tied for the most billion-dollar flood events inflation adjusted for any other year on record. And that's part of a larger trend we're seeing. For example, in the 2010s decade, the United States as a whole had more billion-dollar flood events than we had in the 1980s, 1990s, and 2000s combined. So that's not just an increase in exposure and vulnerability, which we know is taking place as people move to hazard-prone areas like Florida or Texas. But it's also, you know, we know the atmosphere is warming, which therefore holds more water vapor and loads the dice for extreme rainfall, which we just see more and more of these days, particularly in the central and the eastern part of the country.
You know, as we're recording this podcast, there's tremendous flooding that we've seen out in San Diego and parts of Texas and the Gulf are expecting flooding as well. And so I'm glad you brought up this point because yes, more people and more stuff is in the way of these disasters, these hurricanes, these rain events. But the reality is that the top 1-2% rain events are raining with more intensity than they did 30 or 40 years ago. And your data shows that. Data recently reported in the 5th National Climate Assessment reports that. So, you know, oftentimes you see people on Twitter and in certain spaces saying, well, you know, they're not accounting for the fact that there are just more condos or more streets and more buildings in the way of these things. And so that's why the numbers are going up. That's certainly in the equation, sure. But that does not, as you know, negate the fact that we're seeing extremes as well. So drought, flooding. So two sides of the ledger of the water extremes, if you will. that's counterintuitive to people. So, and I know I've been in places, Congress and other places, where people want an answer. Is climate change causing more wet events or more dry events? And my answer is, well, it's both. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's complicated because it is counterintuitive. So in the West, as you mentioned, there's a higher evaporation potential. So droughts can come on much quicker and they can last longer and be more intense. California has seen that really in spades during the 2010s in particular, but they are punctuated by heavy rain events. I believe in the Orville, Lake Orville flooding event, the dam that was destroyed. So you get this weather whiplash in places like the West Coast between just the extreme heavy rainfall potential that punctuates the longer duration drying out. The land is more vulnerable to, and it's already semi-arid anyway. It just adds to that equation. And then one thing that I think is important, and we see in the data, is this newer concept, which I think the NCA and other important publications really do a good job shining the light on, is these compound disasters. These disasters that happen in a tight space-time frequency. And the reason I bring that up is, well, when you've got these long-duration, intense drought events like we see in California for many years since the year 2000, that also lengthens the wildfire season. And what that led to is in 2017, 2018, 2020, and 2021, California had off-the-charts wildfire seasons. Thankfully, the last few years hasn't been so bad in California, but we remember what just happened in Canada last year. It was just tremendous wildfire impacts. And so a lot of the extremes and our vulnerability to these extremes are connected.
And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Adam Smith of NOAA.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Adam Smith from the National Centers for Environmental Information. It's a center within NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So we're marching through some of these events. We've talked about sort of the extremes on both sides of the ledger in terms of water. Were any heat waves in there, or what were wildfires? I imagine that there some of those fell into this $23 billion sort of list as well.
Yeah, of course, the August 8th Hawaii firestorm on the island of Maui was very tragic, the most deadly single wildfire, I believe, in a century, with 100 fatalities. But just the damage, and that's going to take many years to recover and clean up and rebuild in that area. And, it's a juxtaposition of, high wind, dryness, but also, as we know, the urban environment, the human-built environment with, utilities like we have seen in California also play a role into creating, a hazardous situation into something that unfortunately turns into a disaster. We also had two hurricane events, Hurricane Idalia, which we were fortunate only hit the more rural part of the Florida panhandle, and even Typhoon Mawar that impacted Guam. It was actually Guam's first billion-dollar disaster. The caveat there is that most of the damage was actually due to impacts to U.S. military facilities. So I believe that's the fourth billion-dollar disaster in the last 6 or 7 years that's done $1 billion or more to DOD infrastructure. The impacts to homes, businesses, and other and roads and such in Guam were less than were about $500 million, but it was the DOD impacts. But back to heat, the heat wave, the heat dome, as we remember, across much of the South, the Southwest, the Central states in 2023 was really impactful. Several hundred lives have been lost. And what we do is we often look at the heat wave component if it's coupled spatially with a drought event, which is not always the case, but more times than not it is. Then we account the direct and indirect fatalities from the heat component and add that to the whole drought event, which is a seasonal scale, regional scale type event.
Yeah, we certainly had the array of events this 2023. And the point you made about Idalia making landfall in the rural areas, certainly devastating for the folks there in that Big Bend of Florida and those rural communities. So we definitely are thinking of them. But I think your point was that that damage would have even been significantly more had it been in an urbanized space where there is even more infrastructure in place. And so I know that, you know, I went to Florida State, and Tallahassee and FSU were on alert because it was perhaps a couple of kilometers or miles jogging westward that Tallahassee, Florida would have been in the loop. And there's just more stuff in Tallahassee, but certainly those folks in the Big Bend area and those rural areas. And the other interesting thing, Adam, about Idalia from our perspective here in Georgia, there were hurricane warnings and watches in South Georgia still, you know, and I saw that with Hurricane Michael back in 2018 as well. So does that bring to bear, as we're seeing these hurricanes move further inland here in Georgia, much of our agricultural activity is in Southwest Georgia, where in the past these hurricanes weakened a little bit and they bring a little beneficial rain, but now they're still packing hurricane and force and beyond winds. Is that going to up our totals even more?
Yeah, unfortunately it will, and you're exactly right. These hurricane events, as they move inland, they unload all the precipitation and create flooding and damage to many different sectors, particularly agriculture in the Southeast, and even forestry, timber, commercial timber as well. And so, yeah, even though you're not, let's say, live in a coastal county, even if you're within 50 miles of the coast or 100 miles of the coast, you still have to pay attention to certainly the watches and warnings and be aware and protect your property and, of course, protect your family or your own life and expect the unexpected. I think that really since the year 2017, for me doing this type of analysis with our team, 2017 was somewhat of an inflection point in terms of weather and climate extremes really having a frequency, a cost, and a diversity that have just been kind of on a different level. I think we've had 137 separate billion-dollar disasters over the last seven complete years, 2017 through 2023. And the cumulative cost of those in today's dollars is $1.1 trillion. And that's a conservative estimate. Wow. That's just what we can measure. So we have our work cut out for us between the 20th century infrastructure that was designed and built, and now a lot of that existing in the 21st century climate with more energy in the atmosphere and the ocean that enhances these extreme events.
And I think to your point about expecting the unexpected, one of the things that I tell policymakers or just the public or decision makers is the benchmarks in your mind don't apply anymore. You may have a certain hurricane or a certain heat wave or flood in your mind as what you lived through or the worst ever. And we made it through that one from don't need a new policy or on that. But as you just alluded to, the benchmarks are different now. The sort of things that you lived through as a kid or maybe a young adult, those weather events are likely different now. Now, 19 of the 28 events on your list, I believe, were severe weather, perhaps tornadic weather, derecho, hail, dust. Typically, have you seen that those are the most costly each year, or is it typically hurricanes?
So In total, hurricanes are the most costly of all these events we have analyzed. I mean, and it makes sense. We have a lot of assets and population density along the coast, and hurricanes are just powerful machines that Mother Nature throws at us. But yeah, this year was an outlier in terms of it actually challenged and even surpassed the totals inflation adjusted from 2011 from severe convective storms. So it is the most costly severe convective storm year we have in our in analysis. So it was a bit unusual in terms of the total count and also the total cost. And so we use a consumer price index in to adjust for inflation because that is the most comprehensive index. There are other indices you could use, but you know we've worked with economists at the Treasury and the Bureau of Economic Analysis, and they agree that CPI is a good first order adjustment to look at that piece. But certainly the price of rebuilding has probably gone into inflating some of these severe convective storm events to be even more costly last year than they would have been, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, pre-pandemic.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Adam Smith from NOAA. And we're talking about the 28 events last year, 2023, that had losses in excess of $1 billion. Now, I want to pop the hood. You know, we've heard about the events. I want to pop the hood here. This is one of the things hopefully you value about the Weather Geeks podcast. We get these experts come on and we can kind of really dig a little bit. Give us some insight into the actual process. So 2023 ends. How do you go about then sort of pulling together this list or this ranking? What's sort of the sort of nuts and bolts of that with your team?
Yes. So historically, this used to be a biannual analysis. Then it jumped to a quarterly analysis about 6 years ago. And just last year, we changed the cadence to monthly because we're just having so many extremes and it's a better form of communication. So we have about 12 different public and private sector partners that provide data access to us. So that would be the insurance and reinsurance industry, you know, Munich Re Insurance, Swiss Reinsurance, Verisk Property Claim Service, for just as some examples, but also important federal partners like FEMA's Presidential Disaster Declaration data or the National Flood Insurance Program data. The USDA Risk Management Agency is an important partner, as well as the National Interagency Fire Center, the Energy Information Administration, and of course, state agencies and disaster response units that provide reports. All that information is gathered on about a weekly basis, but it's analyzed on a monthly basis. And so doing this type of analysis, of course, requires a broad array of public and private sector data, like I just mentioned. And so we're analyzing hurricanes, severe convective storms, winter storms, crop freezes, wildfire events, drought and heat wave events, and inland or river basin flood events. And I had mentioned that from all this data, we're trying to capture total direct losses. So that would be damage to homes, to businesses, to government buildings, contents of those structures, tie and element losses, damage to infrastructure, roads, bridges, levee systems, electrical grids. Of course, damage to vehicles, boats, even offshore energy platforms and U.S. military bases that are impacted, and agriculture and forestry assets. But what's equally important to know is what we are not able to account for, which would include things like natural capital or environmental degradation. Those are non-market losses, so there's not really consistent data or frameworks to capture that yet, but we're working on that actually with an intergovernmental group I could mention. We also don't capture things like the mental and physical healthcare-related costs. And we know a lot of these extremes do hit vulnerable populations that have a more difficult time sometimes rebounding from these extreme impacts. And finally, the supply chain ripple effects outside of a hazard region, that is also not captured, so it's contingent business interruption. So all that being said, this is a conservative loss with what we can measure, but we know there are other things we need to continue to work on to include. And one example would be wildfire smoke. That's been so ubiquitous across many of the Northeastern and really the whole East Coast. It was impacted by Canadian wildfire smoke for weeks last year. And so parts of the population who are more vulnerable to that particular air quality, you know, it could enhance mortality, morbidity statistics in a really negative way. And so that's an example where we and other partners need to do some more work to try to quantify what that is, because it's a real impact.
So you mentioned something that I wanted to amplify. I was just on a briefing with some congressional staffers in Washington this morning. And one of the points that one of my fellow panelists made is oftentimes with things like the NCA report, or the IPCC report, there's this notion that climate scientists are exaggerating or hyperbolic or doom and gloom and the world's going to end, when in fact, as dire as many of these reports are, they're often consensus reports that are sort of conservative in their estimates or of what's going on. And you just seem to amplify or echo that these numbers that are being reported on these billion-dollar events may be on the low end of the, based on your metrics. And in doing this, as long as you've done this, are there certain regions that are emerging as particularly vulnerable, or is it sort of equal access or opportunity?
No, I think that several states have been impacted more heavily in recent years. We know Louisiana had, five or six tropical cyclones impact it in 2020 and 2021. Hurricane Laura, Hurricane Ida, I remember. I think that even actually went over New Orleans. Florida, you know, had a few hurricanes with, of course, Hurricane Ian in 2022 and Hurricane Nicole and some other events. But then California also is part of the mix in terms of the water issues, water quality, water availability with the drought, the wildfire seasons it's had in more recent years, 2017, 2018, 2020, 2021. And California is an example where you get this compound disaster with cascading impacts. Drought leads to longer wildfire seasons, which lead to burn scar potential, which then are exacerbated by atmospheric rivers that enhance debris flows. And so there's an actual linkage between the hazards if they're close enough in space-time. So what we've seen is, unfortunately, certain property insurance companies have gone bankrupt. In fact, I think it's a couple dozen in Louisiana, in parts of Florida, even California. And unfortunately, that means they're not underwriting risk anymore for homes and auto in particular. And that really is an important part of the stability of everyday life in terms of being able to know that, you know, financially you could be secure if a disaster was to impact your home, your business, your property. So yeah, the several states have really had a tough run, and hopefully I think the silver lining is maybe they can learn something from all these disasters. What is extra vulnerable? Maybe what's also, has a high level of resilience, and because every disaster is different. And so learning from that and trying to implement different forms of mitigation, I think, is really the key to mitigate future losses.
Talking with Adam Smith from NOAA, and really last question is one that's been on my mind as we've been talking today on Weather Geeks. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from University of Georgia. Who are your users of this information? And if not necessarily who is using it, who would you think would benefit from using this type of information?
Yeah, I think this information provides different types of baselines to really look at the data and understand what's happened, where did it happen, why did it why did it happen, and try to understand better how to minimize future risk. One thing we did in the last 2 years, we worked with the development of the FEMA National Risk Index, and we kind of built a layer on top of their index looking at compound, county, and census tract hazard and socioeconomic vulnerability. So in our risk mapping section of our website, you can compare at the county level or the census tract level any combination of these weather and climate extremes we measure with the billion-dollar disasters, with a lot of with about 10 different variables from the Social Vulnerability Index, which is a kind of a gold standard index. And so you can see over the last 44 complete years at the state level, all the impacts. You can normalize it by population, by GDP, by tax-based revenue, just different ways to normalize the data. And then you could also look at the risk and see what the risk profile looks at a more finer granularity. So it's a tool in the toolbox. And I think the federal government has done a really good job in recent years to develop new tools to add to the toolbox, because no one's going to develop a single tool or single interface or product that's going to answer everyone's questions. So I think that we have enough collective challenges out there in terms of trying to live with these enhanced extreme events. And so, of course, data is first and foremost to better understand what's happened and perhaps how we can better learn from that and protect ourselves moving forward.
So one of the producers of the Weather Geeks podcast is Dalton Molnax. And he, in preparing our production notes, he wanted me to sort of ask you a question about duration versus scale or size. So, for example, California flooding with those atmospheric rivers, sort of a long-term, multiple river, multiple day, up to a month event versus an event that has a large spatial scale. Mm-hmm. Does one drive cost more than the other, or is it really kind of the compounded effect?
I'd say it's a compounded effect. I think the intensity of event, whether you're talking about drought or hurricane or a tornado outbreak, the intensity probably has a more acute impact as far as financial costs and unfortunately loss of life. But the area and the duration of an event also are pretty important in terms of aggregating losses. Actually, that's a really excellent question, and we haven't probably interrogated that as much as we should, but that's another example of how you could use this information that we have in our analysis and add some value to it or try to look at it a different way. So excellent question.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. This has been a really important discussion. It's depressing, so I won't say it's been a great discussion, but it's an important discussion for our listeners and our viewers to understand the context, because as we see these extreme events and climate change, there's always the so what, it's polar bears, it's 2080, but these extreme events, likely based on attribution studies, the NCAA and the IPCC, these compounding and increasingly costly disasters have the DNA of climate change in them, and that's just the reality. So Adam, thank you so much for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and we'll see you next time on Weather Geeks.